Our speaker for this session is Dr. Holstrom. Dr. Holstrom graduated from the University of Missouri and was board certified by the American Veterinary Dental College in 1989. He currently practices at the Animal Dental Clinic in San Carlos, California. Thank you.
Thank you. How many of you have read the guidelines? Okay, we're finished then. That's it. Okay. How many of you know that they exist who haven't read them? Okay. Well, we had a task force appointed by AHA in 2004, and we met at the AHA headquarters down the road here in Colorado. The weather was not quite like this. They promised me that any time I come to Denver, though, I will always see this. Beautiful green grass, trees. They showed me, Ed Eisner is gracious enough to be my host this weekend, staying at his home, and he showed me this patch of snow. What's with that? At any rate, we met here. We had a little bit of snow that weekend, as I recall. And our Karen Smith was our moderator. We also called her the cat herder. She did a great job on keeping us on focus and on track and developing these guidelines. It took about a year after that before it was finally published, before we finally had all the research and all the facts and all the numbers together. This came right after the senior care guidelines that was published by AHA as well. I encourage you to read those also. The idea was to set guidelines for dental procedures in veterinary practice. Before, it had really never been done. No one had sat down to figure out what exactly is this. And we hate the word. You want to drive a dentist crazy, just call it a dental. We hate that word, but what exactly are these dental procedures? So, we had, fortunately had lots of spacious library downstairs. We were able to use library and other resources. Months of further research, and finally was published in the Journal of American Animal Hospital Association and Trends Magazine at the same time. Members of the task force, and that would be Karen right there. We had, please don't go away. Myself, being the chair, Jan Bellows is boarded both in the general practice board as well as in the college. He practices in Florida. He's also speaking here this weekend. Ben Comeroy, how many know Ben? Ben's a great guy, very opinionated. He's known for some very famous statements as far as extractions, when in doubt, whip it out, things like that. He has written a gold standards of veterinary practice in the clinics in North America. Great contributor to it. Lana Conaway is also a diplomat of the college. Kate Knudsen is a general practitioner, so she led the general practitioner's voice in the whole process. And then Jeannie Vitreau is a technician. Now she's in the specialty technician academy. So the purpose of the guidelines. Well, you know, we want to try to avoid the wreck. And we want to get everybody on focus. They're guidelines, not standards. There's something that we're recommending that people be doing, not necessarily saying these are AHA, you got to do it type of things. Dental care is necessary to provide optimal health and quality of life. Dental treatment is not uniform, and that's been the big problem. You've got one driver here doing one thing and the other driver doing the same thing or something totally different, and you have a big accident happening like we have in this toll booth. It's an attempt to inform those doing a good job to keep doing it, and those who are not, to raise the bar, try to improve all of veterinary dentistry. The guidelines contain an introduction, definitions, materials, instruments, equipment, assessment, cleaning, dental cleaning and evaluation, client education, follow-up, and references. So all these are suggestions that we recommend that we do with every patient. First of all, the definitions. Space was limited, so we really tried to figure out what's the most important definitions that we needed to deliver the message. At the time, the ABDC did not have a nomenclature committee in function. The result of it was, and part of it, like I think the guidelines got it going, was that Jan Bell later went on to become the chairman of the ABDC nomenclature committee, which had been dead for like 20 years, and finally resurrecting that committee. But we defined dental chart, dental prophylaxis, a lot of misnomers in prophylaxis. We call it often abbreviated a prophy, and we say anything we're doing in dentistry is a prophy. Even though we've extracted 25 teeth, that's still a prophy. Well, prophies are preventative dentistry. And the derivation was from the word prophylaxis in human dentistry. Prophylaxis has other connotations. And so the dentist abbreviated prophy, and then we grab that, we go into the dental office to have our teeth cleaned, and we say we're going to have a prophy done on you. And it was just a neat term. And the patient that has stage 4 periodontal disease is not having a prophy. They've got the disease, just like you don't give a vaccination with a dog with parvovirus. You treat it. We need to be doing periodontal therapy on those guys rather than prophies. So we define prophies, the term dentistry in general, endodontics, the treating of the inside of the teeth, the need for teeth that have fractures to be treated, exodontics, gingivitis, oral surgery, orthodontics, periodontal disease, periodontitis, periodontal surgery, periodontal therapy, and pockets. So these are some of the terms that we defined in the guidelines. We talk about materials, instruments, and equipment, the requirements of the facility to perform these procedures, and operator protection. We need to have a dedicated space separate from the sterile surgical suite. We need to have adequate ventilation and scavenging. We need to have adequate lighting, a table that somehow drains. Does not necessarily have to be a fixed table like we're illustrating in Dr. Bell's practice here, but some type of a table that where you can get the slop that comes with dental procedures away from the patient. We need to protect the respiratory tract of the patient, intubation, suction, or packing. We need to have the proper materials, instruments, and equipment, and we go through that in the guidelines. Dedicated space, this is Dr. Eisner's practice. Most dental procedures are non-sterile. We have to recognize that. It must be separate from the sterile surgical suite. That's an AHA standard that be done, but still we find areas in practice where this is not done, and this is brought forth here. We're concerned about aerosolization of bacteria, particulate matter. So as we're using the ultrasonic scalers and other instruments, we are creating aerosols of bacteria and other debris that's not particularly good to have close to a surgical area. Also, we want it to be in a low traffic area, but not necessarily in the back of the clinic somewhere or in the kennel or whatever else, shoved off to the side like we have in this picture. The attention of the credit has not been given to protect the guilty. We want to avoid anesthetic gases, aerosolization, not in the kennel area, not shoved off to some unkept corner. Well, this is pretty well kept up, but it's still an area where I would find a very hard time to work in ergonomically and everything else. We want to have proper lighting, low heat, high intensity lights. We want to use magnification to be able to adequately and safely visualize the oral cavity. I find that the best magnification is 3 power, and probably even more important than the magnification is the depth of field. You want to have it at a working depth of field. Generally 15 to 18 inches is good distance for most people. If it's too close, then your face is shoved up, and if it's into the procedure, and if it's too far away, it's hard to operate that way. Dental tables. You know, it's interesting. How many of you have dental tables that are fixed with plumbing and everything else? Almost everybody does it. It's, how many of you have surgical tables? They're standalone by themselves. And everybody has surgical tables standing alone by themselves. Why do we have to go and have this plumbing put in? It doesn't make any sense. You're limiting yourself to an area to work on the patient. In surgery, you know, you have the table that swings up and down, goes sideways and everything else, and you can work with it. Why not do the same thing for dentistry? So, you know, this is a table that we use. We have a tray, plastic tray that fits over the top. This grate goes over here, all the fluid drains on down, it drains on right down to the bottom of the table, and into a actual kidney litter bucket that catches the fluid. We don't have to have any plumbing. We can move this around anywhere in the room we want to have it moved to so that we can work on the patient without having to get ourselves all twisted up and ergonomically incorrect to do it. Just like with the surgery. So this is my way of doing it, is to use a mobile table, and I just would not go back. So we want to have the table at any rate. We allow for drainage. It has to be impervious, cleanable material. We want to protect the respiratory tract, intubation, suction, or packing. Talk about packing. Well, I should talk about packing. Many people will do procedures on lateral recumbency, which I prefer. Some prefer to use it in a dorsal recumbency. If you're using a dorsal recumbency, you're going to have fluid go back into the trachea. Not a good thing. So then you need to be packing the pharynx with gauze or whatever else. You got to make sure if you're doing that you make, and your staff has to make sure that you pull every bit of gauze out of there to the point of counting things as it goes in or tying it in a big bundle with a big red string or whatever else to make sure you have. And equally, the most important thing after the procedure is to check and make sure that you got that packing out of there. Very important. I heard of one incident where the technician heard about packing. She went to the boss and asked if she could do that. The boss said, no, you can't. She told her coworker anyway. The coworker went ahead and packed the pharynx. They extubated the cat without extubating the packing. Cat died. Cat happened to be owned by a surgical nurse who was married to a law practice attorney, a malpractice attorney. What a bad situation, you know. I mean, they were guilty. Done. They messed up. So if you're packing, if you're doing dorsal recumbency, you have to have some system that you just make sure it's infallible, that you're removing the packing. And then even if you're not packing, the last thing you do before you extubate is take a look inside and visually inspect that pharynx. Make sure you have nothing around there that could possibly get into the respiratory tract in any possible remote way of happening. So, caution with packing. I just can't overemphasize it, and I'm probably going to get into this again. Visually inspect before extubation. We have materials, instruments, and equipment, some tables that list. People always asking, well, what materials should we have? Table 2, they list materials needed for practice of dentistry. Table 3, instruments and dental surgical pack. Table 4, equipment for performing dental procedures. So, table 2, materials, antiseptic rinse. We use this ahead of time to disinfect the oral cavity. Prophy paste and pumice. What you want to be using when you're using prophy paste is a fine prophy paste on all procedures. You can have coarse prophy paste if you want for the tough stuff to get off, but make sure that you're always using the fine at the end. Otherwise, you're just roughening up the tooth. And keep in mind, every time you're polishing, you're removing some portion of the enamel, some percent of enamel. It's small. In human dentistry, it's more important because we're going to live a lot longer than our patients do, and we're going to have our teeth cleaned 3 or 4 times a year. It's going to wear that in that process of polishing. So it's really not an issue in veterinary dentistry as far as polishing off the enamel layer, except if you start to use coarse prophy paste. you always want to use the fine prophy paint. Prophy angle and cups, we don't really talk about it, but we need to have this. There are oscillating and they're circular. You know the circular, all they're good for doing? Catching hair. In the what breed? Yorkie and Schnauzers. Yorkies and Schnauzers. It's just a Yorkie Schnauzer hair magnet. It's all those circular. But so there's oscillating ones that go back and forth at 90 degrees. And much preferable to use in the circular. Fluoride. Fluoride's been controversial, mostly by people who haven't used it. We use our fluoride on all of our procedures as a final. Fluoride changes it attaches to the layer of enamel. It makes it so the bacteria can't attach or don't want to attach to the two surfaces. Same thing with a sealant. The Orovet is a sealant that's put on there, and then the client will do that once weekly, and that will help to prevent plaque from forming. Needles and syringes, radiographic film or digital sensors. You can't do it without dentistry without dental x-rays, and we're going to be talking about this next hour. We're going to go into the whys and why you're losing money if you're not taking x-rays in the first place. But for your patient's sake, you need to be taking x-rays. Of course, gauze and sponges. Table 2, materials for periodontal therapy or surgery. Local applied antimicrobials, things like Doxirobe or Arestin, suture, bone augmentation material, hemostatic agents, local anesthetic drugs. This is FloSeal. FloSeal is a human product. It's the greatest hemostatic agent that I have come across. We actually will mix it up and then put it in little aliquots at 10th of a cc, 20 or 0.25 cc's, put it in the freezer and then take it out if we need it. And it's has to do with thrombin and actually causing a clot to form on your surgical areas. The only downside, it's made by Baxter. It's very expensive and you have to buy it in lots of five boxes at $150 each. Dental surgical pack. Well, this picture was taken at the Samuel Harris Dental Museum in Baltimore. Old veterinary dental instruments that used to be used, we've come a long way to using what is used commonly in human dentistry. Scalers, curettes, probes and explorers. Scalers being used above the gum line for cleaning off gross calculus. Curettes can be used above or below the gum line. Scalers have a sharp point, so you don't want to take that below the gum line. Curettes have a round, we call toe, which can be used for subgingival scaling. We want to have sharpening materials. These instruments need to be kept sharpened. And this has always been a question for veterinarians, to how do I get my instruments sharpened? You can pay to have it done. You can buy books, like one of the books is created by Hugh Freedy called It's About Time, and it has a great instructions on how to sharpen. Or you have clients that are dental hygienists. Invite them over for lunch. Have them teach your staff how to sharpen these instruments, how to use the hand-holding instrument techniques. They love to get and do something different. And coming into a veterinary practice is something different than working on these usual dirty human mouths that they always have to work on day in and day out. Probes explorers are used for, you need to be probing the periodontal depth. Explorers are used for testing some below the gum line. It increases your tactile sense. Sharpening materials, I had mentioned, scalpel, extraction equipment, thumb forceps, hemostats, Mayo and Metzenbaum scissors, needle holders, mouth mirrors, magnifications. This is a kit that's put together by Miltex. That has some of the very, very fundamental basic equipment that you need to be having. Dental surgical packs, periosteal elevators, luxators, periodontal elevators, extraction forceps, root tip picks, root tip forceps. You can see that we have this packed in a sterile pouch. Your elevators and forceps and your instruments need to be sterilized. cold sterile, and that should be steam sterilized or gas sterilized. Cold sterilized does not do it. Throwing it in some Novasan and then throwing it in the drawer, rattling around in there, isn't going to do it either. No sense, the mouth is already infected, no sense adding more infection to it. In our practice, we charge for a sterile pack. And it's right on there, surgical pack charge. I've never had one client yet complain about getting charged for a sterile pack. Just explain this is what it is. And, you know, if there comes time to buy and need to buy more new instruments, I just go buy new instruments. It's always, you know, in a positive cash flow situation as far as sterile packs go. Table 4 lists equipment. We need radiographic equipment. If you're going to do dental procedures, you need to be taking dental x-rays. There's just no ifs, ands, or buts about that. We need a high and low speed delivery system. We need to be able to polish teeth. Yes, you can get away with electric polishers. The problem with electric polishers are when we take things, make them small, we make friction. Friction makes heat. Heat makes breakdown. And these things do not last as long, nearly as long as you're going to have with your air-powered equipment. Plus, the benefit of having air-powered equipment is you will have to have a high-speed handpiece. You're going to be able to cut teeth easier. I don't see how people can extract teeth without having a high and low-speed, or particularly the high-speed equipment. Need equipment for sterilization, burrs, an assortment of burrs, although most of the time I'm using a 701 burr. If you just gave me one burr, that would be cross-cut Fisher burr. I can do almost everything necessary with a 701. And I'd be very happy with it. My associate does almost most of his with the pear-shaped burr, just individual preferences. Power scalers, the subsonic, ultrasonic, ultrasonic, or piezoelectric. I prefer the magnetostrictive ultrasonic scalers. Suction, optional, and fiber optics are optional. When I graduated from veterinary school, the Cavitron was an instrument that was just fairly new, just coming out. We were taught never take an ultrasonic scaler subgingival. And the reason why, it was all we had was these beaver tips or universal tips. And they just were too big to take below the gum line. Now with the newer, finer, slimmer tips, that can be used safely under subgingival. But you need to take and turn down the power of the system to about a quarter power when you're using a subgingival tip for two reasons. One's for the sake of the patient, that you don't injure the tissue down there. And the second is the sake for the instrument. It's not meant to be run full power. If you run those full power, they wear out a lot quicker and less effective. So turn down the power when you're using that. Operator protection. This is my good friend Carol Weldon, who's a dental hygienist. She loves me to show you this picture. Anybody know Carol? She's done a lot of teaching. And the best compliment you could give her, if you ever see her, if you're ever in one of her classes, is to say how beautiful she looks here. No, don't tell her I ever show this anymore, okay? But we need to have operator protection, protect against the aerosolization of pathogens. I think she's overdone it here, where she has got these safety glasses, which would be fine by themselves with a mask, but she's put the hood on top of that. But the safety glasses are also reading glasses for her. We want to take and before we start the cleaning procedure, if we do have a nasty mouth in particular, is irrigated with a 0.12% chlorhexidine solution. So just wash out the mouth ahead of time. This will decrease the aerosolization of bacteria anyway. It will cut down at least if anything's aerosolized, it'll be dead. So literally brush the teeth with a chlorhexidine solution. It also increases the operator's safety that way. Now, if we have a healthier stage 1 or stage 2 patient, not necessarily doing that. I'm talking about the stage 3 or particularly the stage 4 of the real Grunge mouse. Operator safety, radiographic safety, protect the oral cavity, respiratory system, skin, ear, eye, and ear. What about this picture here? What do you think? He's got a gown on. That's great, right? Mask. I like it. Does she have eyewear on? I can't tell. Yes. Yes. Maybe no. Yes. But look at that position that she's in. Talk about a backache on the way to happening. We've got to give our people better positions, better stations to work on than on the side of a table here that's going on. So ergonomics, proper position to minimize immediate and chronic injuries. When I saw this picture, I just shuddered to say that this is not what we want to be doing here. We want to have instruction on instrument handling techniques as well. Assessment. Well, this is kind of one of the things I assessed the possibility of this happening when thinking about coming to Denver. This is what we call a happy hour in Denver. Right, Ed? Yes. What? Yeah. I can't. Well, why not use earplugs for the operators is the question. And I can't steer you to any references that say why not. I see plenty of references.
Why?
Oh, there's a lot of research in human dentistry as far as chronic, at least a high speed handpiece, and dentists. You see a dentist that's over 60, they've all got hearing aids.
So
and there's no, they don't. And it's probably a good idea. It's something we should be talking about at the next staff meeting. I thank you. I just never had thought about it.
Well, I think it's in the standards, actually.
It's in the standards. I think it was written in
the guidelines.
Is it in the guidelines? Did we
yes.
put? Okay. I know in the standards it's in there. It's a plus if you have it, but it's really not a negative if you don't. But, yeah, I think it's a good idea. And there are many references in human dentistry where greater incidents and retrospective studies of it.
Thank you.
Good question. All right. Assessment of the patient, history and physical examination, assessment by stage of life, oral and dental exams, recommendations and client education. So a history. This is our patient history form. We ask about prior home care, treats and chews, chewing habits, current and previous dental care, current diseases and allergies, medication and supplements. So this is all on our patient history report. We have a client first fill this in, and then the technician goes through it with them and asks additional questions. As to what they're in for. Physical examination. All bodies, systems based on species, age, health, and attitude. Give due consideration to the primary complaint if it's not dental. Establish priorities if there's multiple procedures. Assessment by life stage, birth to 9 months. We're looking at deciduous teeth, missing or extra teeth, swellings, and oral development. What we should be looking at that time frame. 5 months to 2 years, we want to look at the developmental abnormalities, the permanent dentition, accumulation of plaque, and calculus. Over 2 years, periodontal disease, most have it by 3 years of age. And later on in life, we went looking for oral tumors. Yes?
What's your opinion on both procedures? Now, we're combining a dentistry with another procedure, whether it's a dental or some of these old problems.
Good question. What is my opinion about combining this with multiple procedures as far as if we have a tumor removal or an OVH or something like that? There have been a very few reports in the literature that there's been complication when dental procedures have been done at the same time as the surgery. There was one procedure where they did a spay and then did a dental procedure and ended up with infection in the ovarian stump or the, you know, whatever it was associated with the procedure. So my feeling is it's chances are there's probably not much of a problem doing it. If I have the opportunity to get the mouth cleaned up ahead of time, and then the real, and that's what I ended up doing because I don't do anything but dentistry. So if it's, you know, if it's a dog that comes in that's going to need a TPLO or something like that, I say let's get the mouth cleaned up first, then go to the surgeon and get the surgery done. But if it's the type of thing that we're doing all at the same time, my recommendation would be to do the dental procedure first. Any bacteria, and you're going to give a preoperative antibiotic perioperatively. I prefer 1 hour ahead of time. Do the procedure. Any bacteria that are going to be liberated in the bloodstream are going to be cleared in 15, 30 minutes. It's not like it's floating around there forever. That's, blood is going through the spleen, going through the liver, getting cleaned out as we're going along here. Then you're going to, you know, prep the patient, and that's going to take clipping, scrubbing, everything else. It's going to give you time to get into whatever you're going to be doing and be safe. What's my approach on the antibiotics? We use either clindamycin or we'll use ampicillin. And again, 1 hour. When I was in school, we were taught at a week ahead of time, and then it was 5 days, and it was 3 days, and then it was 1 day. Latest recommendation, American Heart Association, you can go online and check it out, is 1 hour perioperatively, unless you're dealing with something that's an abscess. If you're actually treating something and trying to, you know, it's gone systemic, it's your et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But that's very rare. And for the most part, I'm just going to give it 1 hour ahead of time. Okay. Conscious examination. You want to give an examination of the head, oral cavity, looking for abnormal signs, other areas to evaluate and what to look for. These are all mentioned in the report. May require chemical restraint. That's the bottom line. When I'm doing an oral exam, I'm going to try to point out to the client at least three things, three abnormalities. And if I've got a fractious patient, no. I might just skip it at one. Or I may just skip it at the sign of odor. But if at all possible, I'm going to be looking and I'm going to be pointing out client three abnormalities and a reason why we're going to go under general anesthetic to be able to really work this up. We have what's called, and we've come to the abbreviation on VIN, COHAT, Complete Oral Health Assessment and Treatment. In other words, we're going to get under anesthetic, we're going to take and probe, we're going to take dental x-rays, and then we're going to go ahead and treat all at the same time. Most of the time, it's really tough, really hard to see everything in the oral cavity, everything that you have to do. And so, when they're awake, when they're under anesthesia, yes, you'll find it. But when they're awake, I'm looking for those three things. If I don't see three things, I'm not looking hard enough. They're there in most patients. If they're not there, well, maybe we don't have to do anything at all, period. But, at any rate, chemical restraint is really the key to this whole thing. And you may not have a precise treatment plan until then. But what I will do is go through it. I call it a treatment plan, not an estimate. Because I'm looking at the left side of things, what we're going to do to the patient. The right side of things, what it costs, is all there. It's all listed out. If the client wants to talk about it, that's fine. They can go ahead and talk. But I am talking about the left side. Propofol, the sevoflurane, the IV catheter, the fluids, the this and that. All the way down the list of what I'm going to be doing, the dental x-rays. Now, I'm talking about the need and why we're doing that, focusing on that aspect, rather than focusing on the money part of it all. But, yes, you cannot, a lot of times you won't see everything on an oral exam. You need to make recommendations to the recommendations in client education. discuss this with the client, discuss wellness and preventive dental care, diet, treats, the need for daily health maintenance. We as veterinarians have taken it upon ourselves too much to say, come in for every year, or come in for every 2 years, or come in for every 6 months and we'll clean the teeth. Where we need to get this back to the client, where they need to be participating. If they didn't have brush, if they weren't brushing their teeth every day, you know, within a month they'd be divorced. You just think about it. If you want to try that experiment, go ahead. Stop brushing your teeth tonight and see how popular you are tomorrow and the next day. And we expect our patients to have their teeth cleaned, send them home, and come back in a year. It's, you know, like a dog with, you know, like the old days of veterinary medicine, where the dog came in with a heart murmur and we gave him these little blue, purple tablets and said, come back next year. And that's not longer how we treat cardiac disease, and nor should we be treating dental disease the same way. So if the treatment, discuss the plan, thorough oral exam and evaluation under anesthetic is really the way we go. Exam and evaluation, 1 year for cats and small breeds, at 1 year of age, 2 years of age for large breeds. We talk about dental cleaning and evaluation. That previously, what I showed here was our dental chart that we use, and we're charting. You can see the patient has been charted. We've recorded every probing depth that we have. Looks like a tooth was extracted here. We had a missing tooth here. There's another extraction right there. In addition to our medical notes, we talk about the dental cleaning and evaluation, how it should go. The general prior to anesthetic, anesthesia, dental procedures, dental cleaning, additional steps for periodontal disease and other, and postoperative communication. This is an order sheet that we have, and usually what we're going to be doing is we're going to be writing down on the anesthetic log what actual drugs that we're going to be doing. But we put the patient's weight in here, and it calculates the normal drugs that we might be giving, might be ordering, as well as the emergency drugs that we might have. And doses are all calculated out for us, right, by the spreadsheet. Cleaning and evaluation. Well, this is what we don't like to see. This is an awake dentistry, a conscious dentistry. He's got them all wrapped up, Brutathane in there, and claiming he's doing a good job. This just isn't going to happen. But when we're doing this, when we're doing it right, it has to be well monitored. After you use inhalation anesthesia, we can't give these guys an injectable and expect to do any good job without an intubation. Awake patient or sedation reduces the ability to make accurate diagnosis and does not allow adequate treatment. I'm going to be talking about dental x-rays and what the incidence of finding on dental x-rays are. In no way can you take a dental x-ray on an awake patient. I've done one in my whole career. One patient who have taken dental x-ray. And it could have been a series on that. It was a sea lion, a very well-trained sea lion. And you give her a command, and actually they gave her a command once to kiss me, and she planted a kiss and kept it there until they gave the command to release. That well-trained. And she would take the sensor with the protection that we had on it and hold it in her mouth and put her face against the ball that she was told to fix to. And I could take, you know, got some good x-rays with her. That's the only time that I've been able to ever do that. And if someone would come in with a dog that was well-trained, I guess I'd be tempted to do it. But I just have not seen that happen yet. Pre-op exam, laboratory testing based on the stage of life and existing disease. It's also discussed in the report. IV catheterization, pain management, very important topic. Antibiotics when indicated. Anesthesia, one trained person dedicated to monitoring. So having one technician on one patient and no one else monitoring is a invitation for disaster. So we need to have one individual monitoring that anesthetic. Body temperature, heart rate and rhythm, respiration, pulse oximetry, blood pressure, end tidal CO2. IV fluids, we want to make sure we're preventing hypothermia the bear huggers or some type of water blanket is essential. Local anesthetic, eventual oral surgery. Dental procedures. Again, prophy's on healthy or gingivitis to prevent disease. Periodontal therapy if you have disease. Performed by licensed or credentialed technician according to the law. Position for safety. Avoid the mouth gag. I never use a mouth gag. I should say there's one exception in cats. I'll use a cut-off syringe cap to open the mouth about an inch, but never a spring-loaded gag. I've had too many patients from seen elsewhere from other veterinarians that a mouth gag has been put in there for 3 hours, the mouth has been hyperextended, and they come in, next 3 weeks, their jaws are hanging with a sprained TMJ. This is how I will hold a patient here, and actually I'm working on this tooth right here and extracting. I took my hand away so that they take the picture. But my thumb is on the canine tooth, my index finger is on around the first molar area. My middle finger is opening the jaw, or being as a pivot here, and then I'm able to do my procedure either way without any mouth gags. If I need to have someone hold the jaw, then I have someone gently hold the jaw as well. But this gives the jaw a chance to relax when we take my hand away. Make sure you disconnect the endotracheal tube when repositioning. Essential steps for dental cleaning, oral evaluation, radiograph. Hand or power scaling, polishing, subgingival irrigation, anti-plaque substances, charting. Additional steps if they have periodontal disease, probing and recording depth, periodontal therapy, local or parental antibiotics, periodontal surgery or extractions if indicated. And biopsy abnormal masses, post-operative grafts, particularly in extractions, are important. And if you don't feel capable of doing a procedure, don't fret about sending it to a specialist to take care of things. Post-operative management, prior to extubation, we want to make sure that that gauze is taken out of that mouth. So examine the pharynx. Maintain an open airway until sternum. Maintain body temperature and continue IV fluid support. Monitor and record vitals until the patient's awake. Then continue your pain management. Client education and follow-up. Discuss procedures that have been done, existing or potential complications, immediate post-operative care, antibiotics and post-operative pain, diet change, oral and written appointment, and follow-up an appointment. Home care, how many of you are familiar with the VOHC? VOHC is a committee of the AVDC, American Veterinary Dental College. It stands for Veterinary Oral Health Council. They have a website at www.vohc.org. Let's see here. I have that. Yeah, www.vohc.org. And they review research that has been performed on health home care products. So TD was the first one to get VOHC approval, and there are a number that have followed, companies that have put the money into the research to prove that their products do what they say they will do. And VOHC oversees that research to make sure it's done correctly. So the home care is a vital, important process. I'm going to call, make sure that it's being done, seeing how they're doing, asking any questions. We want to recommend daily home care. There are special chews and foods that can be used, and I had mentioned the VOHC. Progress or oral follow-up may require more than one. If we have a patient with periodontal disease, oral tumor, etc., it may require more than just one procedure. Certainly may require more than one office call afterwards, examination afterwards. So make sure you're following them. Healthy annually, gingivitis 6 months, periodontitis 3 to 4 months, recommended follow-up periods. So you may think that's what you think of what our guidelines are, but that's what they are. Any questions? Yes.
Chlorhex
rinses in cats wasn't good. Well, I think chlorhexidine has caused some burns in both cats and dogs if it's been placed in the dental wash, in the reservoir where the ultrasonic scaler is, and used constantly and left in the oral cavity too long. If you're using it, rinse, put it in, rinse it out. No, you're not. It's not. It's also going to cause problems if your percentage is not correct. I mean, it's a disinfectant. It's doing very good at killing cells, bacterial cells, and it will kill other cells if left on long enough or given enough time to do it, if it's too strong. So you want to make sure you're using the right dilution.
One more question. If you're using your hand against your rinse, do you ever soak them in Chlorhex or a mouth rinse?
Do I ever soak my instruments in between when I'm going tooth to tooth to tooth? No, we just generally keep on going, wipe them clean. You can wipe it clean with a gauze. But as far as actually disinfecting it in between, it's the same oral cavity. I want it sterilized between patients, but I don't think we need to really disinfect the same instrument on the same patient. Yes? Pain medication following extraction. I will generally, in dogs, use tramadol. I also will use non-steroidal anti-inflammatories, depending on what kind of extraction that has been. In cats, I'll use Buprenex, oral Buprenex. I used to be a fan of fentanyl, and that's really gone by the wayside with Buprenex being a lot easier on everybody. Yes? Medicam for cats I've used occasionally, but frankly I haven't really used it that much. I'd rather use Buprenex if we're really in there. Sometimes long-term, yeah, tapering dose, but I'd really get to the source of the problem. If we're talking about stomatitis, which is a whole nother afternoon's lecture, I'm in there extracting teeth to begin with, and we're acute pain control rather than chronic. Okay, yes? Should you be taking dental radiographs on deciduous or primary tooth removal? Yes. Yes, I think it's well warranted to take x-rays before and after on primary teeth. Next hour, I think I will show one where someone removed the wrong tooth. I think it's next hour or the following hour where they removed the wrong tooth because they didn't take x-rays ahead of time. That's pretty embarrassing. Yes. Product on the Orvet. I was a skeptic of Orvet to begin with, and it took me a year to warm up to it, and I use it on every patient now. The one thing that I was hung up on was this thing about drying the mouth, you know, reading the instructions. They're dreaming. You can't do it. And it'll stick to a wet mouth. And two things that convinced me about that. One is I took a microscope slide and put some water on it, and then I floated Orvet on top of the slide, not smushing it in, nothing else. I poured it off the slide, and it stuck to the wet slide. The second one is not really scientific at all, but there's a type of I'm a scuba diver. I teach scuba, and we'll probably show some slides as we go along here next time. There's a certain type of sea cucumber that if you touch it in the wrong way, it vomits. And I'm not supposed to do this, but I do it anyway. I just can't help myself. And I've got a good friend. She's no longer suckers for it, but I take it, like I'm giving her a bouquet, and she grabs it, and it goes, blah, and just, you know, all this slimy stuff all over the place, and it sticks to you. It's going to stick to you for weeks. You know, at the end of the week of the dive, you'll still have the sea cucumber stuff on you. And so there's another substance that will stick underwater too. Maybe Orvet's this. No, it's not. Okay. We're going to be talking about radiographs, radiology, next hour. And I guess we got about a 10-minute break here. And until we go to that.